as of right now, we've got one confirmed case of TB, okay? So one person who had TB that was confirmed on diagnostic testing. We've got five people who have what we're calling probable TB. So they have things that make us think this is likely TB, but we're waiting on other testing to confirm where things are at. And then we have seven people who we're calling possible TB, and that's they're a bit lower down. It's TB is in our thinking about what might be going on with those people, but there's still a lot of information to come back in terms of testing as to tell us that, yes, this is TB. There have been, in the last 2 weeks, over 430 people screened through public health up at the clinic. So Joanne and her team have been very busy screening people up at the clinic. So 430 people, you know, a third of the community have been screened in the last 2 weeks. And we've run, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, we've run four TB clinics in Goose Bay following up on people from that screening. That's kind of a snapshot of where we are with cases and potential cases of TB in Nain right now.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk a little bit just to kind of provide some context, because you're probably wondering, you know, like, how do we get here? Why are we seeing TB every so many years? Like, what has led to all of this? And I really want to say that TB is a social disease with a medical aspect. So what I mean by that is that there's other factors that often influence TB and what cause people to become sick. So, for example, housing is a big one. So overcrowded housing, ventilation, poor ventilation in housing. Food insecurity is another big piece around TB, because, of course, when you're healthy, you know, and you have a nutritious diet, you're more likely not to develop, you know, more chronic conditions that will make your immune system more prone to TB waking up, as we talked about earlier. So many other pieces, and very, very, very important pieces, is smoking. And sharing cigarettes, sharing smoking devices like bongs, third lungs. I don't know if some of you have heard these terms, but this is a very high-risk activity for spreading TB. Because if somebody with active disease is breathing into a bong, and then somebody else comes and breathes that back out, it's going directly into their lungs. So it's not even entering the air for somebody else to breathe in. It's like direct contact with TB bugs. The other piece that's really a main risk factor as well is alcohol use, because it often impairs our immune system and it allows TB to activate in your system if you already have latent disease. So it's really, really important that, like, you know, we have to look at some of these underlying social determinants of health, and as a community think about, okay, how are we going to tackle some of these issues? What are we doing, and how do we improve what we're doing?
TB is not new here, and unfortunately, and you know, it's been going on for a long, long time, as Mr. Lamp said, it goes way back in his family. So one of the important factors about why this keeps popping up, is this pool of people, which is a large pool of people, not just in this community, in many communities and around the world, but that have latent TB or sleeping TB. And as long as that pool of people are untreated or aren't being followed up for their sleeping TB, that can pop up at any time and start spreading TB again through the community. And so we've talked before here, and I'm sure we're going to talk again, about the idea of community-wide screening, which can be a helpful tool, but it really, that will identify a lot of those people with sleeping TB. But unless we can get people treated and have people take all their medications and that kind of thing, that disease will keep popping up. As long as they're sleeping TB, it will keep popping up. This afternoon, there is an X-ray machine being delivered to Nain.
Thanks.
That's coming in this afternoon, and starting this weekend and over the early next week, there will be a lot of testing done to make sure that it's feasible to do those X-rays, that we can get good pictures here, that we can transmit them appropriately, and the picture that is on the other end for the radiologist is adequate. And I think that'll help get a lot more people screened close to home without having to fly out to see me, as nice as that might be. The two people that are visiting us from Winnipeg Public Health Lab are looking at the feasibility of putting in potential testing that we can do immediately on people's sputum that would help us decide if there's TB. That one is maybe a little bit further off than the X-ray machine, but I think we're making really good strides to getting that in our region and quite possibly in Nain. So there's a lot of work being done on that one right now. The other big one that has come out of this work over the last few weeks is there's a new treatment for the sleeping TB. I think people will know that often with sleeping TB you have to take medications for up to 9 months, and that's a real hassle. There is a new medication or a new option for that, which is much easier, and we're working on trying to get enough of that medication available here to have that as the main option for people with sleeping TB, so that maybe more people would opt for treatment.
Can you eliminate sleeping TB?
We can try. No, I mean, I don't think 30% of the population of the world have sleeping TB. Everywhere in the world, 30%. It's everywhere. And it's hard to eliminate, but we can get the number down. They can get the amount down by treating people and following them up appropriately, and by dealing with those factors that help that sleeping TB wake up. Sleeping TB is less of a problem if you don't have overcrowding, if you don't have high smoking rates, if all the things that lead to that TB waking up to give you problems. Okay. So it's kind of two pronged. One is trying to treat sleeping TB, but one is trying to make sure it doesn't wake up. The other thing we've been ramping up, and I know early on there were some issues with access, but we've heard that, and we've put more resources into the clinic here to make available for people to get assessments if they have concerns about TB, questions about TB. They can go to the clinic, and the nursing will do an assessment, talk to them about the risks, talk to them about symptoms, and help them decide what the best next steps for screening will be if needed.
It's really, really important that if you have an appointment with public health, that you show up for your appointment, whether that's going to be for taking medications, whether it's to come in for more testing for your sputum, whether it's to come in for a second TST, because oftentimes when we're doing contact tracing, you may need to get one tuberculin skin test on your arm. And then the public health nurse may say to you, depending on circumstance, I need you to come back in so many weeks because we need to do another one, just to be sure. It's really, really important that we keep those appointments, critical that we keep those appointments. A lot of times we've heard from people with active disease or latent infection that they feel really stigmatized having to come to public health a couple times a week because they feel, well, people knows I'm here for TB because I'm coming back and forth to public health for 2 weeks. Really trying to change that thinking around TB and really support people through the process of being treated is really, really important.
One of the pieces of feedback we've heard, and I'll own part of this, is that when we were here in 2015, there was probably an expectation for more follow-up from us in terms of information to the community and coming to talk to the community in follow-up to what was going on then, and kind of heard loud and clear that didn't happen and that was disappointing. And so I think we were speaking with leadership in the community and stuff and talking about we're setting a date for, we don't have the exact date, but it's going to be the beginning of June. We're going to be back to kind of give an update. There's a lot of work's going to be going on in those couple months, but we'll give an update about where we're at that point and hopefully be able to answer questions further and address any concerns.
Does TB, whoever had way back in 70s, 80s, and 90s to this day, can that TB come back?
If you have the sleeping TB, if it's not treated, that can come back at any time through your life due to any illness that's going on or anything else. So that can come back. If you had active TB and were treated for that active TB and took all the treatment, it's very unlikely that active TB from before, if it was treated, will give you problems now. But you can still catch TB again. So even though you've been infected and treated for TB in the past, if you are a close contact of somebody again, you can be infected. And so that's why we follow up contacts of even if they've had previous TB. Certainly, if you have concerns, go to the clinic and get checked out. But if you're a contact of somebody with TB, then the public health nurses would be in touch with you and we would follow that up. The question was around some perceived and or real communication issues and confusion between screening and testing and LGH and New Nazi government. So you're right, there are some jurisdictional things that make it complex at times. For screening, so screening of contacts and contact tracing, that is all run out of the public health at the New Nazi government. And so they would, if you are named as a contact or you're on a screening list for some reason, you would be contacted by them and they would initiate whatever appropriate screening is. And that's very individual, okay? It doesn't mean the same thing for everybody. Testing, or I guess if somebody has concerns about their own health or there are health concerns, we're wondering why someone's sick, that should be started in the clinic. And the nurses in the clinic have a standard set of questions around looking for TB possibilities and talking about TB history and stuff. And from that, if they feel that certain screening that public health needs to do is appropriate, they will refer you to public health. It may also be, depending on the history, that the clinic decides that certain tests like an X-ray or sputum or something are appropriate, and they may consult with myself or Dr. Versteeg and ask us what we think the best next step is. And then that would just be initiated without ever having a stop at public health. If you have concerns, I think the point of contact should be the clinic, and they are prepared to steer that. And like I said, I think access to the clinic is much better now than it was a couple weeks ago. So you should be able to get an appointment for that TB assessment fairly quickly and go from there. I think what's really important for everyone to know is that screening and testing look different for each and every one of you. Depending on previous history of TB, depending on health conditions you may have, depending on all kinds of things, what we do for an individual person around testing or screening looks very different. So I think there is not a... It's important, because I know people compare notes, and it's important to know that there is not a one-size-fits-all for everybody, okay? So that's kind of my baseline statement there. If somebody has a positive skin test on screening, or they have a previous history of TB and there are concerns for some reason right now, the next step is to do a sputum sample if they can produce one, and to do a chest X-ray. Both those things will happen in that situation. If somebody does not have a positive skin test, for the most part, unless we have some reason to really be concerned, if someone does not have a positive skin test, unless they're a young kid under 5, we don't do those other tests as screening. Now, if someone's got health conditions that we're really worried about TB and we think they have it even though they have a negative skin test, we might do them. But generally, without a positive skin test, we don't go down that road. But latent TB, you're not passing TB to anybody in any situation unless it activates. The way it's transmitted is really by droplets in the air that have that TB in it. And so someone needs to breathe that in. And so probably the more higher risk part is just the being in close contact with, between a baby and a parent. You can't catch TB by touching something that's got TB on it, or a toilet seat or utensils or anything like that. It's got to be through the air.
Like if you've got somebody who's got active TB and they're supposed to be taking medication and they're not, what do you... If you're not taking it, you're obviously still spreading it, maybe and maybe not. So I guess
that's a complex question. It's a good question. Any way we can encourage everybody to take their medications properly, that's better, okay? But we do run into problems with some people not taking their medication properly. There are ways we can force that. Like if somebody is deemed a risk to people around them based on the fact that we know they have TB that they're coughing up or things like that, then they can be forced to take treatment. Okay, we don't like to go down that route, but that is a possibility. The problem is a lot of people who take partial treatment treat themselves to a point where they're no longer right now coughing up TB and no longer spreading TB right now. But in a year or 2 years or whatever, that person's at very high risk to be active TB again. And the other big problem is they're at higher risk of having TB that's resistant to the drugs that we use. And that's where it gets scary, right? We've got good drugs that work very well, but if the TB bug is resistant to it, then it gets much harder to treat. And one of the risks for that is people not taking the medication properly. TB is a hard disease and very complex. So most of the TB we deal with is pulmonary TB or in the lungs. And that's relatively easy to kind of diagnose and deal with. The harder situations are when TB spreads to other organs. And often there is something on the chest x-ray, but sometimes there's not. And so then it really becomes more about the symptoms that people are having, the being sick over a long period of time, doing poorly, and having a high degree of suspicion for TB amongst the people that should be testing for it.
People are looking for TB in the lungs and they're missing these other TBs that people are dying because of stuff they're missing.
I don't want to get into any specific cases, but I do, if somebody is really sick and we can't explain that for another reason, we have to be thinking about TB. Once somebody is treated, we don't do a whole lot of follow-up unless they are a contact again, unless we have a reason to screen again. You should not be denied at least a discussion with one of us about the risks and benefits of doing all those chest x-rays.
We've got a whole toolbox of different tests we can use, that we adapt the tools to each individual person as much as possible.
If you had a negative skin test before and you're a contact again, then you would get another skin test. That's usually the way it goes. And so there's a lot of people in this community and many other communities that have had been tested multiple times because of multiple contacts. And it's only once if you've had a positive skin test, then it becomes a bit more complex in terms of the different testing we do around screening in those contacts.
When we're doing contact tracing, and if you were called in by public health to, we checked your records and you're due to have a TB skin test, you know, we often ask, like, you know, when the last contact would have been, because that's part of our interview that we do with somebody who has active disease. So, for example, for yourself, if we deem that you needed a skin test, usually if you've been in contact with somebody with active disease and we're quite worried, like you're somebody who's a household contact, a high-risk contact, generally it takes about 8 weeks from the time you're exposed to the time that your body will mount the antibodies for TB. So it recognizes, okay, see, I'm seeing a bug in my body, is what your immune system is saying, that I haven't seen before. So it starts to develop some antibodies to try to make those bugs go away. So it takes about 8 weeks for that to happen. So sometimes when we're doing contact tracing, we'll say you'll get a skin test on today and it might be negative. And then a nurse might say to you, well, I need you to come back in so many weeks for another test so I can make sure. Because from the conversation that we had with the active case, they said, well, my last contact with so-and-so was, I don't know, March 31st. So we might say 8 weeks from that date, we want you to come back and have another one done. Because we want to make sure that we didn't miss anything.
If you have one skin test and then say, like, a couple days after it was done and come back here and then you was in contact with somebody's active TB, how long before you can go back? So you still just gotta wait 8 weeks or can you go back regularly?
It wouldn't make sense to do it before 8 weeks.
No.
The people we worry about in that 8 week period are kids under five, and that's why often you'll see kids under five who are on medications just in case, until they get that second skin test.
And until we get a handle and treat people who have latent infection, you will see peaks of TB continue.
Treatment is completing the treatment. It's if someone's asked to come for screening and asked to come again, whether it's 2 months later or 6 months later, but all that's really important because it's all those steps that are going to get everyone to that stage where we could say, okay, that's it. TB's not this problem that keeps reoccurring. An outbreak is something that has a beginning and an end.
So an outbreak is kind of something that comes and then it's finished because of treatment or because of whatever else it burns itself out, it's done. The problem in northern Canada, TB is what we call endemic. So it's just there, right? There's always a low level of TB. And then because of all the factors we talked about today, you get these blips. So technically, like if we get into technical jargon, that's not really an outbreak. This is like what happened in 2014-15. It's all related, I think. Yes, because there is this low level of TB that's always there, and it's going to rear its ugly head as long as we don't fix all of those problems we've talked about.
Shouldn't it be mandatory to get everybody in town to get tested?
You know, I think it's a really good question. I know we talked about it in 2015. I think we're talking about it a lot more seriously. Well, we talked about it seriously then. I think we're talking about it. We're having a different conversation about it now, about whether that makes sense. But again, even if we did that, we would identify a bunch of people that right now at this snapshot in time have latent TB. But you can never treat all those people, right? And so it's not going to fix, we will still have cases popping up and we will still have active disease. It may help us treat some more of those latent people. And we are looking at how we can screen more of the community. But it would also involve people actually saying, yes, I will take the treatment for that latent TB if I have it, because a lot of people choose not to. It's because you have a choice with latent TB. It's not like active TB where we can kind of force it.
If someone has latent TB, yep. Shouldn't they be given that choice? Shouldn't they be able to be diagnosed and given that choice?
Well, they are largely. I mean, we've screened, but we are talking about how we will screen more of this community. Like a positive skin test is not enough information to tell someone you can or can't do something. Because in all likelihood, someone with a positive skin test does not have disease they're spreading. And so we cannot just come down and say, you can't do this and that. Especially to pick up that group of people who may have been told long ago that they had some positive tests and haven't had any follow-up. I think that's one place where screening community-wide may be of benefit, and to try to pick those people up and make a plan for them. And that's something that's on the table that we're discussing how we'll do that. We've been talking a lot about treating latent TB. Like, not everyone is the right candidate for that treatment. So it is a discussion that has to happen.
No, I'm referring to Nunavik.
Okay.
So it's next community north of us in Kangasluduwa. I was there probably about 3 or 4 years ago where they had an outbreak. And rather than sending the community to the tools for screening, they brought the tools to the community and screened the whole community. Everyone had to get screened.
Yeah.
And then the strategies around and the follow-ups around whatever they identified came from that screening.
Yeah.
And that team, the medical team, they stayed there for months on end until they knew exactly what was going on within that community and how they would treat the outcomes of how people were tested. Yeah. Can it be done here? And if not, then what prevents it from being done?
I think it can be done. I think it's going to look different everywhere, but I think there are aspects of that can definitely be done. And I think part of what we're talking about today is bringing those tools closer to Nain, right? If we can successfully get X-ray up and running here, that's bringing a major tool in that process here that will mean people don't have to go out. You know, even with resources we're talking about using in the community, there will be some people that, you know, need some further testing that has to happen outside. But if we can offer that to a majority of people here, then that's a benefit. The 430 people we've screened so far in the last 2 weeks, we've been really prioritizing the highest risk people that are what we would do in a traditional contact tracing. So people who are immediate contacts of cases that we know about. And then what we're now trying to figure out is how we are going to take that next step to offering a wider screening.
Once you have active or latent TB, say you got latent TB all your life, will your skin test always be positive?
Yeah, well, we try not to test it again because of the risk of having a worse reaction, but yeah.
Say if you had positive skin tests and you went out for an X-ray and there was nothing showing on the X-rays, so then what?
That's what we call latent TB. If you have no symptoms of anything else and your X-ray is clear and your sputums, if we're able to get them, are clear, mm-hmm. then that's how we diagnose latent TB or sleeping TB. And yes, your skin test would always be positive at that point. All three of those things, the skin test, the chest X-ray, and the sputum, put a picture together. We test three sputums because by testing three sputums, if someone can produce three sputums, the chances of getting a positive are upwards of, like, if there's a positive, the chances of catching it are upwards of 95% or something. So if you only do one or two sputums, you're much less likely to get off. That's why we do three.
Are there any symptoms for latent TB? Like,
no.
At all?
I'd like to take you off of coming to ground zero. A region in Canada that has the highest rates of tuberculosis, thereby the highest rates in the developed world.
a place where Inuit have died because of tuberculosis. And those numbers are staggering.
It's a regimen of medications, so the regimen is called 3-HP, and basically it's one of the medications is called rifapentin, and then the other medication is INH, which is a common TB med that we use. So that you take the two of those medications for one day a week for 12 weeks. It's not a medication that's approved for use in Canada. But we've gotten special access to it in certain regions of Canada, and Nunatsiavut's one of the areas that's gotten access to it in the last couple months.
So you are using that medication now, then?
In some instances, right now, where it's appropriate, and we're hopefully going to be able to use it in many more situations as the supplies improve. I'm just not promising that it's available for everyone. I'm hoping that it's available for everyone, and it's a very good option. And we do have enough to get started. But I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that we have enough to continue that for everybody that needs it.
A lot of people don't want to take the 9-month course because of consumption of alcohol is an issue. They can't really consume alcohol taking those drugs.
No, there's no question that this would be a really good alternative for people. It's just a matter of ensuring that we have the supplies that we need. That medication will be coming down the pike, and we are starting to use it. But I just don't want to write a prescription for something I don't have.
You certainly recognize that this is treatment for latent TB.
Latent TB. Yeah, it's not for active.
But what other measures can be taken to say to an individual who has latent TB, will it become mandatory? There's only way that you probably see elimination of TB.
Unfortunately, I don't think that'll ever become mandatory. But I think if a community is talking about the importance of it and destigmatizing it and that kind of thing, and supporting people through treatment, I think that will go a long way. A lot of people, I mean, we're talking about people not taking it, but I'm treating a lot of people for latent TB. And the real benefit to that treatment is in the first couple years of infection. So several years out, it's not as beneficial, but we're treating a lot of people through our TB clinic for it. So I don't want to make it sound like nobody's taking medication for this, because they are. I agree with you. I think everyone in town probably has a good reason to be somewhere on that spectrum of needing some kind of screening, and that's where we're hopefully moving towards.
I strongly believe that the health authorities should continue to educate not only the general public, but the people in Maine, along the coast, Goose Bay, Newfoundland, wherever it takes, because there's a stigma around TB. Oh, I don't know me, might get TB. Oh, I don't want to go over his house, I might get TB. I don't want my child to go and play in the gym, he might get TB. There's a lot of education that still must come from the health authorities. And I listened to you on the CDC Library Morning the other day. And there's just so many people who do not know or understand TB. And what it's, what it entails. For example, I just finished building a house not too long ago, and I'm waiting for the bank to send an inspector to inspect my house. He refuses to come to Maine because he might get TB. How many more other, whether it's professionals, general people, your relatives, workforce people, tourists, all of that, I really think that you need to continue to educate through Labrador Morning, through a commercial, if you got to do it that way. So I'd like to know, what are your plans to educate Newfoundland and Labrador?
It's a really good question. I mean, I think we're hearing it all the time. Like just 2 days ago, Sharon and I won't name the company, but we did a kind of a very in-depth education session with some of their employees to say, you are not in danger by doing work around Maine. And we hear it all the time. We did it in 2015. It was the same thing. I mean, with various companies, there was a number of companies we had to work with on that. And so that's more on an individual basis, I guess, when problems pop up. I don't know what the answer is, and I'd welcome any suggestions.
Whether you're going to do something for something at the counter at Air Borealis, are you going to do it at the dock? Are you going to speak more to Labrador Morning? Are you actually going to do a commercial?
It's an interesting idea. And I'm not trying to make light of what you're saying. I think it's really important because that stigma is out there and it's strong. The problem is the media doesn't want to talk to us unless something's going on too, right? And like Labrador Morning or VOCM, who I talked to yesterday, like they only want to talk to us when this is going on. So if you've been treated for latent TB, that's a one-time treatment as it stands right now. So there are people that can contract active TB multiple times and they would get treated every time.
You can only diagnose latent TB one time, really, because you need the positive skin test, and then that's positive forever, right? So it's hard to diagnose it. We know you've been in contact, but not every contact is going to have latent TB.
Latent TB can activate. If it's not treated and the right environmental things are going on, latent TB can activate and cause disease. If you have a positive skin test, you will get, in some order, you will get a sputum test and a chest x-ray. You'll get both. In a perfect world, we'd have the sputum sample done, reported, and then get a chest x-ray. Either way, you need all three of those tests done. If you had adequate treatment, we're not worried about you unless you get exposed again.
What is your long-term plan, and what is your strategy for, like, we have like an epidemic now. It's going to calm down, but what is the long-term plan to tackle this?
The part that I do is really the medical management of TB part, right? So I diagnose people and I treat them and whatever. There's the whole other public health side that I think the rest of my colleagues here can talk about, but that's really, those are the people that are looking at kind of how do we deal with TB as a whole, right? Like, I'm only good at diagnosing it and treating. So I think from a perspective of kind of diagnosing and managing TB and stuff, I think we have the players for that team. We have that team. What I think we need to work on is really what is the strategy for, and this is a lot of work that Nunatsiv has been working on, what is the strategy for eliminating TB and getting rid of those, dealing with those social determinants of health we talked about, the housing, the smoking, the food security. Like, that's the important stuff with TB. Alcohol is independently a risk factor for people with latent TB activating their TB. So if someone's drinking a lot and they have latent TB, that increases their chances of activating. It makes it very difficult to treat TB, partly because the medications don't agree with alcohol, partly because it becomes very difficult to manage people, find them or whatever else, right? So alcohol is a big issue. It also, a lot of people who are drinking very heavily are not well nourished, and so that makes them less equipped to deal with TB. And the other part, you say, taking medications. I mean, yeah, and that's something these guys deal with on a lot. They're chasing a lot of people. By doing both drinking and taking the medications, it puts your liver at more risk. And we have to watch very closely the liver.
There is work being done in partnership with ITK within each of the regions, different regions across Canada, to look at developing an action plan or a strategy, if you might say, to eliminate TB by 2030. And so that action plan, that strategy will be developed by next year. So we're working really hard to make sure that work is in place.
The TB virus can evolve to be spread other ways?
I mean, as it stands right now and as it has for a lot longer than I've been around, it only spreads through the air. Somebody who has previously had TB and has been treated, that person is not infectious. Just because we don't have a confirmed diagnosis doesn't mean that we're not fully treating somebody, okay? So just so that's clear. So if we're really worried about somebody, we treat them as if they have TB, regardless of the tests that come back or that we don't have back yet, okay? So I want that to be clear. We're not just sitting on people who we think have TB and not doing anything about it, okay? So when you cough up a sputum, we do an initial test on it right away.
Where?
And that gets in St. John's. And that gets done, depending on shipment and all that kind of thing, we usually have that within the week. And that's where they look at it under a microscope and decide if it looks like TB, okay? Then all those, even whether they see TB or not, all those sputums go off for culture. So they try to grow TB. And at 8 weeks is when they say that's negative. So we wait 8 weeks for a positive confirmation for the follow-up test. So for the first test is right away. Well, as not right away, but it's fairly quick. And then the follow-up test, the kind of confirmatory test, is 8 weeks. What these ladies are here doing is they're looking at the feasibility of setting up testing with this product called a machine called a Gene Expert. Okay, and the Gene Expert is a test that can turn around a sputum in 2 hours. So we can look at a sputum and in 2 hours say, is there TB or is there no TB? That's not up and running here. They're looking at whether it's possible to do that in Maine with the equipment and regulations around it and all that kind of thing. Okay, so that's what they're doing here. And they're trying to come back to us with recommendations about how we might be able to do that. It's a major step that we are looking at that in this community. I mean, I think the short-term goals are continue to get our contact tracing done here, which we've made major headway on, get X-ray up and running, and see if we can get these other kind of testing things available in Maine. And to me, the more we can get close to home, the better, without moving people out. Those are the big short-term goals in my mind, is to help with the diagnostics around what's going on right now. I think the other short-term goal will be to at least come up with a plan for what community-wide screening would look like, what kind of testing and who that would be.
So some of the long-term pieces is what I spoke about in terms of the strategy or the action plan that we're looking to develop. And, of course, we will be doing engagement sessions in each community and also holding regional sessions so that we got feedback from you know, all of the community in terms of how we develop the strategy. From a long-term perspective, we need to start planning how we tackle the latent infection piece and look at how we treat that. Because I can guarantee you, until we do that, we will be back here in 3 years.
How did you feel about the meeting today?
I felt good about it. I mean, I think you'd have to ask the public who was out for the meeting how they felt about it, because that's the most important thing. But I felt like it was an opportunity to address a lot of concerns in the community, answer a lot of questions, provide information, and give people an opportunity to feedback to us on how we're doing.
Do you think you accomplished what you were hoping to today?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main goal is just to come and provide information and hear people's concerns, and we've done that.
So there was some confusion about the screening testing process before. Do you think that's been cleared up today?
I hope that people have more information and are better able to understand the system. And if there's further concerns, we'll do our best to clarify them.
Okay. And what about the X-ray machine? Now, that is a mobile unit, correct?
Yeah. So it's a mobile chest X-ray unit that's been loaned to us by the federal government. And there is a lot of logistical work being done right now around electricity and around the IT solutions needed to make sure it works properly. And then there will be some testing in terms of ensuring that the images that it takes are appropriate in the eyes of the radiologist. And if all that is good, then I'm hoping that we'll be up and running with doing chest X-rays fairly soon.
Okay, so no definite time frame on that, right?
There's no way to give a definite time frame on when we'll be able to do wider chest X-rays until we know that all that testing works. But all that testing is going to start early next week.
So regarding the people from Winnipeg that are here with the gene checking into the Gene Expert, mm-hmm. Is it a machine? Is that a...
Yeah, so it's a piece of laboratory equipment that can be used for rapid diagnosis of TB. So they're here to establish whether it's feasible to run in Maine, given various regulations around who the type of person that can use it and the environment that we would want to use it in.
And so what's the next step? How long do you anticipate being ramped up here in Maine, or is that... really difficult to answer.
It's impossible to tell. I mean, at this point, we're doing the testing and the screening that we need to do to try to ensure that that we catch any problems in the community, and we'll continue to monitor the situation. And on an ongoing basis, we'll continue to do our work with TB Clinic.
Okay, and you're expecting to be back here in early June?
Early June, we're planning to have a follow-up visit.
I was just wondering, the topic of outbreak versus the cluster, is there any numbers associated with that at all? Or?
No, it's not so much a question of the numbers. Mm-hmm. It's more, again, it's more a question of medical jargon or even public health medical jargon. And so it's more a question of, you know, the exact definition that we use. But in the public world, out, you know, when you talk to people, I hear both words being used. I hear outbreak. And I know that people mean just, you know, when there's a spike and when suddenly we see several cases of something. So I understand that that's what people talk about. And this, the situation we're seeing at the moment, there's been one case. And since then, as we do active screening, as we actively look for people who might be ill, we are finding other individuals in whom we suspect that TB is present, and so we're giving them treatment and we're investigating further. I call it a cluster because I'm a bit geeky. Someone also called it an outbreak. We're talking about the same thing.
Somebody today mentioned the word epidemic. What are your thoughts on that?
So again, because it's my everyday job, I have a specific definition of what an epidemic or an endemic illness is in my own mind. Again, you know, out there in general, words are used and I, you know, understand what it means. To my mind, an epidemic is something that, again, that happens over time. And, you know, we talk about the flu epidemic, for example. So it happens and the flu changes over time. So several years later, it's not the same flu. So that's an epidemic. It comes and again, it goes. It's a bit longer than an outbreak. When we talk about endemic, it means it's there. And it remains there, and sometimes you see spikes, but we know that the disease is there, and that's kind of what we're seeing with TB. That's why it's so difficult. It's because it's dormant. It can be dormant in the community. You don't see very many cases, and then suddenly you see a spike for all sorts of reasons. And so, to my mind, that's what we're talking about, an endemic situation.
In your professional experience, how serious do you think the situation here in Nain is right now?
The situation overall, and that's thankfully what's being recognized at the federal level and amongst, you know, just is serious. And I think a lot of my colleagues are saying that, and that's why we're trying to work on it seriously. It is, we are, you know, in Canada, we're still seeing a lot of people sick with TB, and that is really something we need to work on. So the situation up in the north is serious. What's happening in Nain at the moment is almost like a symptom of it. It's a symptom of what's the underlying issue is. So what's, I think, the really big message is we need to address the existing situation, and that's what we're trying to do with all the colleagues, to be out there, make sure that we catch people early, but also think about the long-term plans, and that's also what the work we're doing behind the scenes, so that we can get ahead of it and resolve the underlying problem over time, rather than just focus on today and not think about tomorrow.
How do you feel about the meeting today?
To me, I found it very informative and it answered quite a few questions that I had.
It was good. I feel it could have been a little bit longer and more people could have been here, or they could have went to the school or even a couple other public places or somewhere, you know, where they could have, like if there was enough people here, they could have went somewhere else. And I find, especially for the kids, like where somebody said before, there is a lot of stigma around it, and there don't need to be that much. It was good, but it could have been better, but it was still good.
Did you guys learn anything more about TB and the situation in Nain today?
What I was most concerned about is the sleeping and latent TB, because one of the things I mentioned was I can't get the the needle test, because if I get it, it'll show positive. And I was told before, years ago, that it's because I was exposed to TB or in contact with people who had TB, because we grew up as children, you know, my friends had TB, and it wasn't a big concern then. And so, like, when I got older, like, the last time I got that test, I showed positive, and then I had to go to, you know, get an X-ray and do some sputums, and they were negative. So, like, I was never treated for sleeping or latent TB because we weren't ever educated about it, or, you know. So this was mostly my concern today, because I'm still assuming that I'm one of the people that may have sleeping TB, and they're saying now that everybody who has sleeping or latent TB should be treated. So that was my concern. So I'm going to be looking further into that now to see if I need to be treated for something like that. And I'm sure there's still a lot of people in the same situation as I am.
Do you think everybody in the community should be tested?
For that reason, I think they should be, because, like, there's a lot of us, like I said, you know, we were exposed to it when we were children, so there's like a lot of my age or younger than or older than me, you know, like we were all around each other when we were children. And I think it is really important that people get tested.
I think everybody should be tested. Yeah. Because like she said, lots of people her age and like younger, and all these people of this young boy who was exposed to it, they're probably might end up be like her. Like, they don't have TB, they didn't react to the skin test or nothing. But when time comes along, when they're older, like all these 13 and 14 year old children in school, when they're older, they're probably going to have like a positive one and nothing's going to come back, and they probably got sleeping TB too.
Yeah. So, and our like parents weren't educated about it when we were children. Our parents didn't, you know, it wasn't talked about, you know. And now it's like there's public meetings and stuff like that for people to get information. So, and we're getting this information, and yeah, it is really important.
What would you guys like to see the next step to be?
Me personally, I would like to see Nunatsiavut, not just the Department of Health and Social Development, but as a whole, to be more involved to protect its beneficiaries from this happening again. Like, it shouldn't even be happening. And I know they said they're partnering with ITK and all this stuff and trying to get TB-free places by 2030, was it? But that's 12 years from now. How many more breakouts or epidemics or, like, you know, how many more go happen in them 12 years? Our last one was 3 years ago. 3 years from now, then 12 years from now, that's 4 breakouts if we have one every 3 years. And that's how many people go be sick.
So you definitely like to see a long-term plan put in place?
Yes. Yes. Because it ensures that when you get your x-ray, you get that peace of mind, like, okay, my sleeping TB is not affecting me. I'm good for until I don't know when. I don't have to worry about like being sick or getting other people sick or anything like that. And they don't have to worry, especially about people who are so unaware of it and unaware of the stigma and unaware of like the symptoms. Like, I think that it should just happen every year, just so it don't, like, we don't have to suffer another loss, because this is the second one in 3 years. So going by that, how many more people go have to die before they actually try to do something about it every year or every 2 years, and nobody has to die. Like, it shouldn't even be happening. Like, since before my grandfather and all his other peers got relocated from Nutak, Hebron, and Ukuk, people been dying from tuberculosis. That's over 50 years. People been dying from tuberculosis in Nunatsiavut, and I think it's like foolish. Like, it shouldn't even be happening this day and age.
When we were younger, when we were children, there was this boat that came to our communities in the summertime, the Strathcona, and every year the children had to get we got scratches and chest x-rays every year. And like this day and age, like, they're not doing it all the time when they could be doing it. So I think that's another important thing, that even if TB is not around, you know, maybe it would be a good idea that they come and do x-rays and, you know, testing for that disease.
So you're definitely in favor of regular testing?
Yes, I'm definitely in favor of that.
I'm really happy that I've already made an appointment with Joanne, you know, to do tests on me, because I have, I believe, latent TB, and so I have to make sure that I'm not going to have it triggered and wake it up, spread it to either family or to the community. And I believe that is the kind of responsibility that we need from Maine. And I believe that Maine is a model community, you know, in coming out and you know, looking for the answers that it needs to not only look at TB, but other health issues also. Because as Dr. Willem said, TB, you know, latent TB can be triggered by other health issues. And so I want to thank each and every one of you for coming out and supporting our healthcare professionals, and
on some of the questions that were asked about what's to come. Dr. Jane Philpott, who is the Minister of Indigenous Services, has assured me that they will do whatever they can to help the community of Maine. And also Dr. John Hagee, who is the Provincial Health Minister, will look at the barriers that the province has in working in, you know, other communities within Newfoundland and Labrador. So we are looking at many different areas of how things can work better and not have to wait on, you know, what, you know, has to be fixed before something can be done. Thank you.